Dun, 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 dun.
Film history. Dun, 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 dun. The history dun, of dun, film. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. The history dun, dun. Of film history.
It's spooky season, spooky season, spooky season.
Film history.
The history of film.
Welcome to Film History.
The history of film!
Today we're keeping the scary vibes going. Our Halloween extension through November is going strong.
We're the only ones doing it.
We're the only ones doing this. This is Halloween in November. Halloween is so short, man. October, that's it.
Especially when you take 3 weeks off.
Yeah. And also, like we said before, Thanksgiving movies are sparse.
Time is relative, and it's whatever month we fucking want it to be.
Damn right.
The Halloween decorations in the studio are still up.
Yes, exactly.
They're still jack-o'-lanterns.
Yeah, there's still jack-off lanterns.
There's still jack-off lanterns everywhere.
Is that what that pumpkin's doing?
Yeah, that's why it used to be orange, and now it's white.
I thought it was just one of those albino fall pumpkins, one of those decorative ones.
Nope, it's full of cum. Today I'm going to be bringing you, to keep the scary vibes going, I reached into my soul and I said, what is a classic scary movie that we could do? And quite obviously, this came to mind, Psycho.
Oh, nice.
Ooh,
yeah.
Cool.
Alfred Hitchcock's
Psycho.
Dude,
good pick. I'm
not talking
this
about...
This also deserves its own episode because I know we wanted to do a Hitchcock breakdown in series.
Yeah, we're going to do Hitchcock at some point.
This is so iconic out of his career that I think, yeah, for sure it's own standalone.
This was his first horror film.
And that was
really
talking
about cool.
In his trilogy or whatever it takes. We
just,
stick to all the other cool seasons.
Exactly. This is like his hit. So we'll get this out of the way.
Cool.
We'll probably do Alfred Hitchcock next.
next
Halloween November.
Next,
who knows?
Next millennia.
Next millennia, whatever. Right after we do the next best picture. You know?
Yeah, that series. Remember that series?
Yeah. We're doing that again. Don't worry. We'll probably start off the new year with that.
At some point.
At some point.
Eventually.
We'll be doing that.
Has your hard drive of Three Stooges arrived yet?
Yeah, it is. I can get that whenever. Sorry.
Okay,
that's
cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're here in the flesh now.
Yeah.
You have the hard drive.
Upload it. It'll be a January episode at some point.
Yeah.
You know, but the sooner you upload it, the more I have time to edit it. And that'll just be a free week. That'll just be a pass.
We put that whole thing in the can, man.
Yeah.
We got an episode in the can.
We're going to bring it back at some point.
It was so crazy. Did I tell you guys I thought I lost it in Florida?
Oh, my Lord.
I called my three places I was in Florida and was like, yo, is it here? Is it in the storage room? Is it there? Nobody could find it. Dominic was like, you didn't leave it here, blah, blah. And I was freaking out. I'm like, okay, it's gone. It's just gone.
It's gone.
And that's like invaluable. I can't have that gone. I'm like a wreck for like 36, 48 hours. And then Dominic calls me back. He's like, oh, yeah, I just moved some stuff. And I forgot to look there. And it's like,
oh, my
God damn it.
I appreciate
it. You piece of shit.
I love that. I love that journey for that hard drive.
Yeah.
That episode
has a story.
That episode has a story, man. That episode lived in a lot of places and went through a lot of shit.
It'll be, like, probably the second episode in January.
Yeah. And it's just part one. I haven't even
done part two. Yeah.
I haven't done part two where Mo kills Curly in real life.
We still have so much information about the Broccoli family, Don Carter.
Broccoli family, that's so much.
The Broccoli family history.
But today we're going to be talking about Psycho. Man, I love this movie. This is 1960. I always talk about this, but these movies back in like, especially the 60s, man, where it was phone booths, typewriters, newspaper stands, buying cars with cash. You had hotels with actual fucking keys and registry books. You know, if you're a big fan of like LA Noir, you know, I always talk about that, man, where it's like it's all this old timey shit that has gone by the wayside now. But it used to be, you know, phone booths and shit. I don't know. There's just something cool about it. There's something cool about a script where people don't pull out their cell phone. You know, it's like like a little bit more work.
Traditional?
Traditional.
I mean, they didn't have cell phones when they wrote it, so.
Exactly, man. It would be really weird if somebody pulled out a cell phone in Psycho. Be like, wow.
You know what's funny is they're going to be able to recreate Psycho using AI and just insert people with cell phones. And it'll look exactly like
Hell
it.
Hell yeah.
And to give you a little bit about when this thing came out, I'm going to give you.
When are we?
I recently received a compliment for this segment from my boy Jake Armbruster, who I work with. Cool. He has become a new listener of the show, and he says, "When are we?" Was a damn good idea.
Nice.
So, thank you, Jake. Hot Boys of Bond Unite. This is for you. This When Are We?
Start saying the year after it. Yeah. That way we can categorize these.
1960. Been a while. We used to have Radio Man come in here and do this, but he was, I think he was, I don't know, he always got very depressed. Yeah. Remember Radio Man would get down, man.
He died of heroin.
Yeah, I think he, actually they found him dead at the Chateau Marmont for autoerotic asphyxiation or some shit, but he'll be back. He'll
okay,
be back.
All right. Don't worry. Yeah, yeah.
He had a radio wire.
Oh, hell yeah. A radio mic, the old RCA mics.
And just, well, I feel like himself and shoved an antenna up his ass.
I feel like Radio Man only comes when you need to recap. Last we left our hero.
Last we left our hero. Yeah, so, that's true. Yeah,
if we don't have any heroes to recap, then.
Yeah. Radio Man's our hero to recap today. We're recapping him. This is 1960. We've definitely been a 1960 before on this show, but maybe. Fuck it. Here we go again.
I'll still download more music for it.
Yeah, same here, man.
Repeat it. Just repeat the
hell
same.
Hell yeah.
I don't know how many times I've reused the same music for a decade, but our listeners do.
Yeah, our listeners definitely do. I can't remember. I think it was Brando that we talked about 1960. I can't remember. Or maybe Stephen McQueen.
We talk about every year.
Several things.
Yeah.
Like the Rat Pack stuff. There's been a bunch of stuff.
Rat Pack. That was. 1960s. Yeah. I think Ocean's
But Love. This is specifically 1960. This is the first 1960.
Dwight D. Eisenhower is president.
Never heard of him.
His vice president is good old Richard Nixon.
Never heard of him.
But that's how we begin the year. We end off 1960 with the election of John F. Kennedy. And the country's mind was blown. Hey, get it? Because they shot his fucking head off.
But in like 62 or something, right? 61.
Yeah. Or 63 is when they, 63? When he decided a convertible was a good idea.
We elected the sexiest man to ever serve as president.
Yeah, we did. And then they blew his sexy face right the fuck off. In a convertible in Dallas.
Like, he's too hot. We gotta put a stop to all the hotness.
1960, the cost of NFTs around this time. The cost of gas around this time is 25 cents per gallon.
What the fuck?
A 23-inch television is $200, and a new car is $2,000.
Holy shit.
And with the inflation calculator, that's like gas is $2.50.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
It's still cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. A TV is $2,000. A car is $20,000. So this is kind of like 2007 prices.
Okay.
You know?
I mean, $2,000 will still give you a nice TV.
Yeah. It's like 2007 prices when Drake was still like a baby.
Yeah, I think
Drake was born in 2007. Housing was a different story. You could get a house for like $5,000, which even with fucking inflation is still only $50,000. These days, so...
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all the after post-war rebuilding effort.
Yeah.
All that was, like, government subsidies over financing. Loans were cheaper. 50s were, like, the bounce back.
I love a government subsidy.
Oh, man.
Subsidize me however much you want.
Subsidize this podcast right now.
Subsidize this podcast by subscribing to our Patreon.
Because we provide a service.
That's right.
To the American people.
Yeah, thank you for our service.
Thank you for our service at patreon.com.
We need money because...
/filmhistoryhistoryoffilm.
And I would argue that we provide great international public relations.
That's right. We keep the world together.
We bring communities together.
And in LA these days, $50,000 couldn't buy you a fucking cardboard box under a bridge.
My rent each month is $50,000.
Yeah. I pay $50,000 a minute just to live, just to have electricity.
That's my.
You think that's air you're breathing? It's just money.
That's my oxygen bill.
You're standing around, Bill.
It's the only place I've been to that has oxygen bars of just air.
You have to pay for
oxygen.
That shit. You have to pay for that shit around here.
Inhale oxygen at this trendy ass bar. I'm like, this is insane.
That's why we all smoke cigarettes. That's the only air we can breathe.
It's cheaper.
It's definitely cheaper.
Cigarettes are cheaper than oxygen.
You better not breathe the real air, though. That's where you get in trouble.
Oh, yeah. Don't breathe the real air or drink the real water. Yeah. You will die. 1960 is the year that Daddy goes to Vietnam. You know, France had their asses handed to him over there, so it's time for America to step in and see just what we could do.
France went to Vietnam before us.
Oh, yeah.
Where'd they go?
French territory.
They got beat as well.
Vietnam was, like, gaining their independence, and they got, you know... they were colonized by France. Yeah. And France had been there for forever.
That's why they
And we gotta go out and serve the French as are so good. But this time we failed.
Yeah, so we were like, let's see what we can do. And then we didn't do very well
we
either.
The government was like, hey, let's put... They're like quietly like, hey, let's put some fucking explosives and fireworks on this fucking boat out in the middle of this gulf and light it on fire, and then we'll say the Vietnamese did it, and then, you know,
and
we'll
someone will
go
make the
board.
Greatest movie of all time about this nonsense.
Apocalypse Now. And Jane Fonda would go
I thought
over
you were
going
to say Tropic Thunder.
Oh, yeah,
that
it.
Too.
That too. Yeah, and then Jane Fonda went over there, and everybody hated her for it. But, you know, fucking, she did the right thing. Anyway, the Flintstones was premiering
Fonda.
On TV. What?
Jane Fonda.
Oh, man. Barbarella. Just watch Barbarella. Okay. That's the only thing you need to know about Jane Fonda, because that was amazing.
Okay.
Take an edible before you watch Barbarella, or maybe, like, heavy acid. Take a bunch of acid. Take a sheet of acid and watch Barbarella. And you'll know who Jane Fonda is.
That defeats the purpose. It cancels each other out, because just, like, watching Barbarella is like taking a sheet of acid. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't even need acid to watch. Yeah,
if you watch it on acid, I feel like it would be normal.
Yeah, a space woman goes around and fucks alien dudes on different planets.
Is this a porn?
Whew. No, but it was damn near.
Should be.
I mean, she
is
naked.
I'm sure there's like reenactments.
Yeah, there's times where she's like floating around naked.
Is this where I'm doing? Is this where I'm doing a film history on?
Actually, yes, yes, yes. Barbarella will be a film history. Absolutely.
Why did the January slate?
That's a guarantee.
Okay.
1960. The Flintstones is premiering on TV. That
what?
Yep, yeah, the Flintstones is premiering.
I had no idea it was that old.
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah, yeah. That was that old Hanna-Barbera days. All the kids are doing the twist to Chubby Checker.
Those whores.
This year. Those fucking harlots.
Those sluts are ruining the culture.
Those Barbarella whores. Some big films are coming out this year. We've got old Frankie Blue Eyes, Sinatra, and Can Can. We've got dudes actually dying on screen and Ben-Hur, which also won Best Picture.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Won Best Picture this year as well, the 32nd Academy Awards, held at Pantages, hosted by Bob Hope. But the most important thing to ever come out of 1960 was this movie that we're going to be talking about today. Fuck Kennedy, fuck Vietnam, fuck all that shit.
Wasn't Ben-Hur black and white?
Nah, Ben-Hur was in color, baby.
Really?
This was like, you know.
Wait, wasn't Psycho in black and white?
Of, yeah.
And there's a reason for it.
Interesting.
There's a
okay.
reason for it.
They didn't have the money for color.
They didn't have the money for color. Black and white at this point was basically like indie art house films. People were going to color, but if you didn't have the money, you could still make black and white. So black and white was like cheap. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did the audiences feel about black and white?
Well, it depended. That's actually part of this whole thing that I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
It's like people were making black and white films for cheap, and it had gotten to the point where all the black and white films at this point were just sort of schlocky, not good. And so this is part of this whole thing. Hitchcock wanted to make a good black and white film again. Like,
okay.
You know.
I'm bringing it back.
But there's a whole reason for it as well.
Cool.
It depends on who you ask.
Okay.
So, but I'm going to give you a little bit about the plot of this movie. This movie is two movies. For all of you huge fans out there, you already know this, but some people really don't know the plot of Psycho.
Yeah, I've actually seen this movie and I don't remember the plot.
Okay.
I remember like parts of it, but I don't really remember what it's about.
Yeah. We're going to cut that part out.
Okay.
Because
cut that.
Actually just beep it. Do the beep thing over that. We're gonna beep that out because I don't want to spoil the end of this movie. I know it's 1960, but we all know. Beep that part out. Hitchcock was so weird about not spoiling the end of this movie. I feel like if we spoil it, he's gonna curse us somehow.
Okay. All right. Cool.
So I don't want to spoil this movie for him. He felt it very important. A lot of things changed in the movie going experience because of this, and because to avoid spoilers.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was one of the
legacy.
This was one of the first things where I was like, don't spoil it.
Whoa.
You know, there's a big twist at the end.
Dude.
Yeah.
cool.
Yeah, man.
Okay. inventing spoiler culture.
Yes, exactly. Cool. This is EQ's jam. Yeah. EQ is one of those who does not like things spoiled for him at all. Yeah. You know.
Me too. I hate it. Yeah. Don't tell me anything about nothing. Don't tell me nothing about nothing.
I have a thing where it's 0 to 60 for me. I don't care if you spoil something for me. I'll still go see it. But I love going into something completely blind. Yeah. Like, not even seeing a trailer
for
this
thing. Yeah, I hate seeing trailers, yeah.
So the movie begins in Phoenix, Arizona, which is a fitting place to begin a horror. That's a horrifying place. You don't want to be there, you know.
Don't kill me. Don't do that.
No, I'm just kidding, yeah. We love you, Phoenix. We love you, Phoenix! Friday, December the 11th at 2:34 p.m. is the exact date that the story begins. Hitchcock made it a point.
Nothing good happens on the 11th.
That's right. Nothing. That's classic.
Wait, is this November 11th?
December the 11th.
They're all bad.
Yeah, that's right.
What an idiot, because if it was November, it'd be 11-11.
Oh, yeah.
No, wait.
It's 12-11.
Yeah, I know. So we fucked it up. We could just start a month earlier. Good luck.
I'm thinking 9-11.
We're in Christmas time. You know, we're almost to the anniversary of it. Yeah. We're almost there. Maybe... Listen to this on the anniversary, December the 11th.
Oh, yeah.
Almost the anniversary of this story.
But if you're listening, don't stop listening.
Don't stop. Keep going.
Just listen to it again on the 11th.
Yeah, give us some more views.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening, by the way. We appreciate you. We love our listeners. So Marion Smith, Janet Leigh is the actress. Marion Smith is on her lunch break. She's over at Sam's apartment. They're banging. They don't show any of the banging because it's 1960. It's post-banging.
It's post-code.
It's post-code.
You can't show cock on screen anymore.
Right. You can't show full-blown cock on screen.
She's in a pantsuit.
Yeah. She's actually in her underwear. She's in some white underwear.
Meanwhile, you can see Fatty Arbuckle's whole cock.
Yeah. He used to pull his cock out just for comedy. Yeah. You know, they would have full penetration. But
for comedy.
Yeah. But they're in a hotel. She's over there with Sam in this hotel, and you see Sam, he's in the middle of this divorce. He owes his wife a lot of alimony, so he and Marion are fucking in Phoenix for this sort of secret affair that's going on her lunch break. And by the way, having sex on your lunch break does not give you much time to have sex, but you know, you got an hour. You got an hour
Speak
on your lunch
for
break. You got an hour on your lunch break. It's got to take you 15 minutes to walk there. Mm-hmm. You got to get right to it. 15 minutes to walk back. Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot of time to fuck. But Sam and Marion are finding a way. And so she gets done fucking. Sam's like, oh, I love you, but I'm poor. You know, you can't come live with me. I live in this like shack, blah, blah, blah. Or it was a room behind a hardware store.
Yeah, it's like, I'm poor. If I get you pregnant, I absolutely will disappear.
Yeah.
I am gone.
There's no abortion at this time.
I'll be gone quicker than the sex we have on my lunch break.
There's still abortion here.
Yeah. And these condoms are made of like sheep's wool.
Yeah.
So she goes back to work after her lunch break. Fuck. And it's this like ship job. Her boss has air conditioning in his office, but not for the secretaries where they work, answering the phones and shit. And it's hot. It's fucking Arizona, man. It's Phoenix, you know.
Yeah. Well, global warming hasn't kicked in yet, so hot was like 65.
Yeah, it's like 65 whole degrees outside.
And they are sweating.
Yeah, and she just worked up a sweat with Sam in the hotel room. You know, it's fucking hot in here, man. But she goes back to work. So she works at like a real estate office. They buy and sell properties. And they have some very 1960 conversation here, by the way. Her coworker, the other secretary, just sort of casually drops on her that she has begun taking tranquilizers.
What?
She's like, oh, my husband's not very happy with me. I started taking tranquilizers.
Started injecting Xans, dude.
People were just fucking zombies, dude.
Dude, that's
like,
sick. I love that for them.
1960 was just zombies.
Prescribe me some tranks.
Some tranquilizers. And my husband's not happy because I always love it, too, because like these are actors doing a part, but like in real life, she would be like,
my husband's not happy, so I started shooting up barbiturates. The hat man comes to visit me every night.
Oh, shit, man.
I see shadow people if I'm up too late.
And so her boss comes in with this like rich cowboy hat, bolo tie wearing Arizona man. It's very Phoenix man.
Very Phoenix man. Turquoise up and down.
Yes.
Can't tell if it's black and white.
Exactly. But, yeah. Exactly. You knew it was turquoise. That was the only color in the whole movie. It was just turquoise accessories. You know.
Phoenix crystal gemstone money.
Yeah. They don't even say what he does. He's just rich. He probably is Phoenix gemstone rich. You know.
And he's Phoenix meth rich.
This is Breaking Bad in 1960. That's what this man did. He's like absolutely just a cartel member. But he says his 18-year-old daughter is getting married the next day, and he's buying her a house for $40,000 for a wedding present. And he's all about it. He's got the $40,000 in cash. Fucking whips it down in her desk.
Did you say back then houses were $5,000?
Yeah, houses were $5,000.
He's balling out.
Yeah, he's
fucking
buying
a mansion. Yeah, okay.
And, you know, you run that through the old inflation calculator, that's $400,000 today. Ooh. Which...
you bump that off the housing market, that's $40
million. $40 million. He's buying her the fucking house from, like, Gone with the Wind or some shit, you know. He slams the money down her desk. It's all cash. He's like, yeah, see? I got the money. Or... more like, hey,
really? Just like that?
Yeah, just like that. And he throws the money down at her desk and basically he's like, all right, it's 3 p.m. It's time for us to start drinking. So they go back in the office.
Hell yeah.
Start drinking. It's 1960. He says, quote, he's dying of thirst to Rooney. That's what he tells her boss. It is 3 p.m. We have not had any alcohol yet and I'm dying.
Dying of thirst to Rooney.
Dying of thirst to Rooney. And... here's the big thing, and the reason I've told you all this. Her boss says, I don't want that cash around here over the weekend. It's Friday. Bring that cash to a safety deposit box. We'll talk about this on Monday. We're going to go get hammered because it's 3 p.m. and we're in the office, you know, and it's hot out here. We're going to go in the air conditioner and get hammered. So she's like, yeah, that's cool. I'll bring it to the, you know, safety deposit box, but I'm just going to go home afterwards. I got a migraine. I don't want to be here anymore. It's hot out here. And he says, yeah. And the bolo tie wearing guy's like, yeah, honey, go home. Go to Vegas or something. You know, go relax.
Go to Vegas. Yeah.
He literally says, he goes, go to Vegas, the world's playground. And she's like she's like, yeah, actually, I think I'm just gonna go home. I appreciate it. You know,
Vegas is not close to Phoenix, Arizona.
He's
rich. I'm really tired. I got a migraine. Should I like go home? Or you know what'll fix a migraine and tired exhaustion?
A 6-hour drive to Vegas in your 1960s car.
Go to Vegas, honey. She's like, yeah, 1960 Vegas as well. She's like, that's a great place to be.
But be back to work tomorrow. Don't take too long while you're there.
Some mob's going to shake you down for whatever you have.
He's like, yeah, go home. Your boss and I are going to binge drink for the rest of the day. Go away. So the very next shot, like very next fucking thing that she does, she's in her apartment with the envelope of cash, and she's packing a fucking suitcase. She's like, she's got $40,000, which, if you remember, that is $400,000 in an envelope. And she is just getting out of there like she is...
whatever, I'm out.
Dude, she's packing faster than, like, if the police were coming to her door right now. She is fucking... she's going to go down to Fairville, where Sam lives... and pick his ass up from his room in the back of the warehouse or the hardware store. And, you know, they're going to go be rich together in Acapulco or some shit. She's like, she's fucking out of here. Mm-hmm. And who can blame her?
Yeah.
Who can blame her? You know, kudos to her.
We're going to Mexico. They don't even check these days.
Yeah.
The Phoenix 60s. Gemstone guy can blame her.
It does come down to that. It
if
does.
He can catch us.
Yeah, that's right. If he can catch us. You could easily start a new life with
$400,000. Oh yeah, we're especially like you could just drive to Mexico these days.
Oh,
like
my God.
No one's stopping you. Go straight to Tulum.
Straight to Tulum. $400,000. I would become like a mini McAfee. I'd become John McAfee. Mm-hmm, you know, I would just like all the locals would be like making weird drugs in my backyard.
Yeah.
With machine guns.
Yeah.
You know, whole new life. New me? Who dis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That man was definitely suicided, right? John McAfee, we all agree. He
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. He was disappeared. He was disappeared.
In Spain, for sure.
Yeah. He died. He's Epstein. He died of the same cause as Epstein died of. Whatever you think that is.
Same dude. What if it turns out it's the same hitman?
The same guy.
The guy who's like killed all the most prominent people.
Just keeps this
Although it,
really
it would.
Rough prisoner just keeps getting transferred to all these international prisons.
On paper, how did John McAfee die? Was it drug overdose? Because that also wouldn't surprise me. Because he was an old man who did a lot of drugs.
That's no, very true. He was in custody.
Yeah, he was in prison.
Oh, he was custodied?
Yeah.
He was arrested. He was in custody. It was like somebody suicide, but like.
No, okay, yeah,
killed.
He got. Yeah, he got it's the same guy. They just call the same dude.
Yeah.
In like a month, like a week before, 2 weeks before, he's like, if I had to get suicided.
He was like, I'm not about to commit suicide. If I commit suicide, they killed me. And then a week later, he committed suicide.
Apparently, he had like a shit ton of dirt on a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And he was going to release it if they didn't.
He was the craziest man to ever live.
Yeah, he should have just dropped it.
Nuts, man. That guy didn't live in reality. Like, he formed his own reality. Ghislaine's still out there. She's okay.
For now.
You know, like Trump said, I wish her well.
Bro, you know that's gonna come up on this campaign. By the way, he just announced he's running again.
He did it today.
Did you
see there was a leak call or like messaging between him and Rupert Murdoch, who runs all of like the right wing media.
Yeah.
And he said, if you run, we're not backing you this time.
Fox is out.
Yeah.
Fox is out.
So he's running out the back.
A bunch of people.
Media.
He's there's like a hardcore 20% of the conservative party that's like hardcore Trumpians and stuff, but the rest are like, fuck this. There's actually going to be like a big runoff between DeSantis and him.
Yeah, this civil war will be so much more fun than the last one.
Man,
the memes will be way better.
They're saying we're in a cold civil war.
Yes, dude. The memes are going to be so much better.
Yeah.
The
memes are
going to
be
let's
great.
Do it.
Definitely better
let's
than the last Civil
yeah,
War.
Let's,
the memes
yeah.
of the last Civil War
yeah,
were
not,
trash.
Anybody's ever going to do is be like, yo, Trump, Epstein. Like, what the fuck, bro? Like, there's now, it's like not on the back nine of it anymore. It's like, I think, I don't know, maybe that won't swing the vote, but I think shit like that'll be too easy to bring up.
All I ask is that if Russia nukes, nuke me first.
Yeah, I don't want to be on the outer ring of the nuke.
Yeah, I'd rather
that's
not
the,
know it's coming. You
I don't
know
like
what I mean?
The melting.
It's not going to be Russia that nukes us. It's going to be North Korea.
Or if, ourselves.
Then nuke me first. Like, all I'm saying is just like...
Oh, don't worry. If it's North Korea, we will. Los Angeles will be
sick.
Gone.
Sick,
because
we won't know it's coming. We'll just be gone.
We're going to get nuked by Alabama.
Like, imagine if New York gets nuked, how stressful that would be for us.
Oh.
But if we're out, it's like, they're going to deal with stress.
Yeah, now it's their problem.
Anyway, Alfred Hitchcock...
North Korea, if you're listening, please
do not nuke us. We talked about nukes in the last episode, too. We talked about we're just a nuclear fear-mongering podcast at this point.
Welcome to Kill Me Now.
The secret desire is we want to survive the nuke and then have superpowers. Like
I want Fallout 4.
The
that's
inner
what I
desire
want.
Is.
Yeah.
Just give me a power armor.
Welcome
suit,
back to Kill Me Now.
Welcome back to Kill Me Now. Anyway, she packs her fucking bags. She gets the fuck out. She is now in her car leaving with $400,000 or 40 grand. With inflation, 400 grand, you know. And wouldn't you fucking know it, she's trying to leave town. She stops at a red light, and her fucking boss and the bolo guy, Ty, are in the crosswalk. And they see her in the car. Remember, she said, I'm going home. I'm not going to Vegas. I'm going home because I have a migraine, you know. So they see her. They fucking see her.
They're like, hey, could we come to Vegas with you?
Yeah, the bolo tie guy for sure. They were already hammered, so they got really drunk in the office probably. Anyway, she keeps driving. Some shit happens on the way. I won't really spoil it too much because we need to finish this episode someday, and this is a long episode, and I'm just telling you about sort of the setup for this thing.
We've only shot 15 minutes of this actual episode.
Really?
I mean, we've been going for an hour, but I've, like, 15 minutes of useful content.
But the beauty of this is the stress. Like, we're riding in the car with her a lot in the beginning with Marion, and they did this thing where she's having like an inner monologue now, you know, and she's thinking of what people are going to be saying once they discover she's gone. Because at this point it's Friday. They're not going to know she's gone for a few days, you know, and then they're going to notice she's gone, and then they're going to notice the money is gone, and then they're going to put two and two together. Mm-hmm. And so Alfred Hitchcock did this, like all of their voiceovers are playing in her head of what they're going to say.
That's cool.
Marion didn't show up today. Where the fuck is she? You know, what do you mean the safety deposit box is empty? You know, type of shit. And she's it's just so, like, I don't know, like, if anyone out there has ever done anything shady or against the law, there is this, like, thought that you have in your head, this, like, dark...
No, James. None of us have ever broken the law.
But I would speculate that you run through all these outlandish scenarios, yes, the worst case things that could possibly happen.
Yes, absolutely.
I wouldn't know from personal experience. And me neither. I would conclude this.
None of us
would
ever break America's laws, but never. If we did, she knows she's fucked. Like, she knows, like... Each decision that she makes, each second that she drives with this money in the car...
Is more fucked.
Like, mm-hmm. she is just further digging this hole, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what begins this, like, true horror. It totally shifts. It becomes a completely different movie. But it's a horror in the beginning as well, because it's like this woman who is just about to actively decide to go on the fucking, you know, the twilight zone here, mm-hmm. and her life is never going to be the same. She's about to get Sam involved, and it's a very stressful scene.
And then they stay at a hotel?
No, so she's driving along, it starts pissing fucking rain, she can't see anymore, it's late at night, she decides it's time to finally, like, stop somewhere, and she sees a light blinking through the rain. She pulls in to the Bates Motel. And that's where I'll leave the plot there for now.
Okay.
Because I don't want to tell you anymore.
Okay.
But just know,
she stays at a hotel.
She stays at a hotel. And if you ever pull up to a hotel on the middle of the highway and there are 12 cabins and there are 12 vacancies, leave. Just keep driving. Don't do it. And especially if it's run by some dude who keeps talking about his mom. Just keep going. Just don't do it, man.
Cool.
Norman Bates. Shout out to the first incel ever, basically. This was incel before incels, you know.
Did you guys ever watch the show Bates Motel?
No, and I heard it's good.
Okay, cool. I was going to say it was good, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I heard it was good. I want to watch it now. After I watch this, I definitely want to watch it.
Did you rewatch this movie for this episode?
Yes. Cool. Yeah.
Does it hold up?
Oh, one of the best movies I've seen in a while.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like one of the best movies ever.
Yeah.
Dude, for sure. The camera work was groundbreaking. There was so much, like, filmmaking aspect that was amazing and cool. New and cool about this.
Yeah,
cool.
For sure. Definitely go watch this one.
Think about how many times this has been just parodied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comedy for decades.
Does the shower scene kind of come off comical now?
Not comical. No, I wouldn't say comical, especially everything building up to it and leading around it and everything. It's actually still quite, like, violent and disturbing, in my opinion.
You know it's coming, and it still makes an impact.
It makes an impact. Cool. It's like, fuck. Like, and it's sort of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's very, like, immediate, and it does make you think. So this was based on, it was a novel published. It was a book in 1959.
Norman Bates told a true story?
Nice. They kept calling him Alfred Hitchcock kept calling him Master Bates on set because he was a big fucking perv. But
hilarious.
Norman Bates was, and he is reincarnated into Ezra Miller.
Yes, Norman Bates is 1960s Ezra Miller. It was a novel.
So he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, right. He made babies eat bullets. No big deal. It was a novel published in 1959, written by Robert Bloch.
Damn,
everything's a fucking book first. And Hitchcock stuck pretty close to the source material of this thing, but the book was loosely inspired on Ed Gein. And much like a lot of fucking movies, Texas Chainsaw Massacre as well. Right. They say Hannibal Lecter was very Ed Gein-ish.
Okay.
And so this guy, so that's the thing about the movie. And also he filmed it in 35mm that was like zoomed into 50mm. And so it was like... it was basically the same as like the human eye's perception, and he kept it very. It was this thing where he wanted you to be in it, you know.
Interesting.
And it's.
How do you do that? How do you calculate that math? What's the equation on that?
You can tell. There's certain, like, because your eye is a lens. Yeah. So it's like the whatever. There's certain aspect ratio and like a way that you think things can.
Interesting.
Frame.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a disturbing movie. Like it's still a horror. It still holds up in my opinion. And the famous like, that's from this movie.
The
horror sting kind of almost like began here.
Yeah.
You know.
And this is the thing about like Hitchcock is like he has a way of communicating that suspense and the horror, kind of coinciding and making it like. You are tricking your own self out.
Right.
Whenever you're watching these things in all of his movies, I think, you know?
For sure.
It's like, you know that, like, oh, this isn't going to be that crazy or that. But then you're like, I don't know. It's something weird that, like, at least for me, I've heard other people talk about it, but was like, maybe we realize it unconsciously, but it's like you are overthinking things and freaking your own self out through it.
You're paranoid.
While you're watching it.
Yeah.
Kind of paranoid, but it's like, even just with the Psycho thing, like the fact to just have that come in suddenly.
Yeah.
And unexpectedly, in and of itself, is a psychological trick.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah, and it makes you think. I mean, you know.
Because the actor that is jolting, just in the story and just like visually and everything.
I imagine a lot of motel owners were pissed. A lot of people were like, fuck, man, you're hurting our business. Nobody wants to stay at motels anymore
and
now.
And at this time, everybody stayed at motels. Yeah. There wasn't like big chains of fucking motels.
Whoa, because wait, really?
So it was common and relatable.
Yeah. That's what I always talk about with these movies, too. That's part of the horror, you know, is just the time you're living in. But like, absolutely, dude, 1960, you know, this was a time before. If you saw a motel on the side of the highway, you just kind of had to stop. You had to. You know, you don't have GPS. You don't have fucking.
So there were no such thing as nice hotels back then?
No, there was. There was definitely nice hotels, but mostly, you know, these are highway side motels. And a lot of these highways were new. You know, a lot of these highways were.
Route 66.
Yeah.
It was like, I just drove that out here and like. There's still motels, but it might be like a Hampton Inn sprinkled here or like whatever. Yeah. But. It's still like you pull off in the middle of Arizona in the middle of New Mexico and there's these one story piece of shit strip
motels
things.
Yeah, man. And you know, that's kind of like
that you probably still will die at.
Yeah, you
I was gonna sleep in one. I was like stopping this town, I was gonna stay. I was like, oh, which one of these should I just get? Because none of like the regular hotels had any room or capacity. And I was like, whoa, what is this? And I looked at these Google reviews on some of these motels. And it was like, a month ago, my door got kicked in and I got robbed.
Jesus.
Otherwise, I came in and like there was like feces or something all over the place. And roach.
I had a friend who stayed.
Whoa, why would you ever say? He goes, oh, yeah, it has scorpions at all times.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
I'm like,
that's the thing. If you don't get
three scorpions in my room,
get murdered, the bed bugs will kill you.
Oh, my God.
No, I had a friend stay at a motel on the side of like somewhere in fucking, it was like Arkansas or some shit, and a dude blasted a shotgun through his wall in the middle of the night.
What the fuck?
Yeah, dude. Motels are nuts, man.
Dude, that's wild. I didn't know that was, that's insane.
Yeah, man, and that's sort of where this takes place. By the way, back to Ed Gein real quick. Have we ever discussed on this podcast Ed Gein's furniture?
He was the man who made
of people?
Furniture out of people, right?
He made furniture out of people. We've discussed it, right?
We had to have on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, we absolutely had to have.
Yeah,
he was an artist.
Oh, my God.
Ed Gein was an artist.
So he would dig up bodies, and he'd make furniture out of them. And just, if you want to ruin your day a little bit, just Google Ed Gein furniture.
But, like,
the man was an
artist.
You'd be
horrified and impressed at the same time.
Wouldn't you, like, want an Ed Gein?
Oh, my God.
No.
Absolutely.
It freaks me out. It freaks me out. I don't want to see it.
The face chair.
The face chair freaks me out so much.
You sit on faces.
Like, I don't want to see faces.
Real faces. He had the leg lamp before Christmas Story.
That's,
you know what I'm saying?
Freaks me out. I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
The
Google.
Belt, the belt's the worst. What is the belt made out of?
Nipples.
Oh, God. That one hurts. The
nipple
most.
Belt.
Oh, no.
And everybody always, every single thing that I ever read about Ed Gein goes, well, he only killed two people. It's like, hey, man, I bet those two people didn't think they were only two people. You know, it's like,
I bet those two people didn't think they were going to be a throw pillow.
Well, he only killed two people. He did make nipple belts out of them, but it was only two.
Oh, God.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And I mean, also, it's like, I'll donate my body to science, but don't turn me into a chair.
don't turn me into a chair.
You're like 90% done with like a project you've been working on for a long time. Right. All you got to do is like kill two people.
Two more people can finish this chair really nice. I mean, look, man, I don't know. If you're going to turn me into a really nice chair, I might be down, you know. But
I want to make sure my face looks hilarious and crazy.
I got to look handsome.
Yeah,
at least make me look handsome.
Don't make me look dumb.
Yeah,
no, I
make me
look
handsome, man.
I want to look comical and dumb.
Yeah.
But that's what this book is about.
Okay, cool.
This book is loosely based on Ed Gein.
Okay.
Psycho, it's this book about Norman Bates, you know, the whole thing. go watch it. I don't want to spoil it for you, but it the book is the movie, but in book form. You have to read it instead of watching it move in front of your eyeballs. That's crazy. That's how books work.
Got the right. He got the rights, and then the studio like kind of made fun of him, balked at him.
Yes.
Wait, really? This is such a ridiculous idea.
That's where we're gonna get into. Credit actually for this was given to the right person. It wasn't Hitchcock who discovered the book. It was his assistant, Peggy Robertson, who was kind of this famous like Hollywood assistant. She was like a fixer, you know. She was Alfred Hitchcock's assistant. You know how Tarantino's got his people who were like famous for being his people?
Yeah.
She was one of those. She was this real like...
So Hitchcock was already on at this point.
Yeah, he was on.
He was already
that
boy.
He was huge. Okay. He had just made North by Northwest.
Oh.
One of the biggest budget movies in
history. And so he was like, I'm going to do... So he didn't do Black and White out of budget concerns.
No,
he did it for the vibes.
Both.
What?
That is where we're going. It depends on who you ask. But she read the book. She brought it to him with the idea of adapting it. At the time, he was under contract with Paramount. Mm-hmm. He was on this fucking huge run with Paramount. He brought it to them, and as it turned out, their studio readers had already read this book and said, "Abso-fucking-lutely not. We're not making this. This is disgusting. This book is vile. This is like, we do not want some incel serial killer on the Paramount lot. You know, that's not what we're doing here at Paramount. So
that's not what we're doing here at Paramount.
That's not what we're doing here at Paramount. We're
Sonic movies through and through.
Yeah. We have morals here.
We want
at Paramount. You know? But they did have another Alfred Hitchcock's contract guaranteed another film to Paramount. They did not want him to make Psycho. They were expecting this movie called No Bail for the Judge, starring Audrey Hepburn. But she became pregnant, so she bowed out of the movie, leading Hitchcock to scrap that production. And the official stance was that the book was too repulsive, impossible for films, and nothing but anything of his star-studded mystery thrillers would suffice. So they said they didn't like anything about it.
Stick to the formula, kid.
Stick to the formula. And he was about ready to go Cagney on these fucks, all right? He says, fuck it. Bought the rights to the novel himself for $9,500, which through the old inflation calculator, that's about 95 grand.
Oh, not bad.
Not bad, especially for this man.
If you're the cock.
Like, yeah, you're the cock.
Wrong rate if it's owned by a studio and you're trying to buy it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Grand these days for
He's the cock, baby.
He's the cock, baby.
He's the cock.
So the cock's not a problem. The cock won't stiff you.
The cock, nice. That was his motto. The cock won't stiff you. And not only that, he had Peggy go out and buy every copy of this fucking book that had not been bought yet.
So no one could read it, so they could get spoiled?
They did, exactly. The spoiler was in the book, and he did not want the spoiler out there. And it was still a fairly new book, and so he had all of it taken out of circulation so that no one would know the end of this fucking
book. Catholic Church shit.
Yeah. Hold on. But if you bought every book and they're sold out, wouldn't the publisher of the book be like, we gotta print more books?
Not this time.
No, they had a... You can talk to your publisher. You own the rights to it. You gotta like... And they probably planned to do a release.
Because he bought the rights to the book outright.
Watch.
Okay.
Yeah. The publishing company makes money because they do another re-release in conjunction with the movie.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. That's the cock, baby.
That's the cock.
The cock will never stiff you.
You double dip unless you wanted to.
So he buys this thing. He goes back to Paramount. And they said, hey, cock, we still don't want to do it. Like, that's cool and all that you bought the fucking every book in the world. We still don't want to do this nasty ass movie, okay? So he offered, he's like, look, we'll make it cheap. I'll do it in black and white. He was already doing the TV series at the time, Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'll use my TV crew. This thing will be, you won't even know we're here. Don't even worry about
it. Don't even know I did it.
Paramount came back and said, again, buddy, no, we don't want to do it. Also, all of our stages are booked, so fuck off. Come back to us whenever Audrey Hepburn isn't pregnant anymore.
I love how you were like, they said no first and then said their stages were booked. Yeah. We could have just told you our stages are booked, but no, we really wanted to ensure that we told you no for the third or fourth time.
There was, like, there were a lot of conversations in Barney Balaban. He was the president of Paramount at the time. A lot of conversations being had, like, dude, like, this is the wrong thing. Like, you're this again, this was his first horror movie. Up to this point, he had not made horror that we know Alfred Hitchcock for. You know, this is North by Northwest guy. This is Alfred.
Spawned a generation. Spawned,
exactly.
No
yes.
birds yet.
Hitchcock.
No, right, right.
There's no birds.
And they're like, dude, you're about to tank your career. You're in your 60s. Like, you're about to do this, like, disgusting murder film. And it's like you're going to tarnish your legacy here. And Paramount's not behind it, goddammit. You know, and then they threw him out of the window, like Jack Warner.
Yeah, we're never going to finance you torturing a woman of birds.
Exactly.
You'll never achieve that.
Yeah. Universal will. But, so Hitchcock countered that he personally would finance this project. And
damn, he really believed in this.
He really fucking believed in this thing. Personally financed this thing. We're not even going to film it at Paramount. I've already looked over. Universal Studios has a stage open for me. So you guys will just distribute it, but I'm going to go fuck off and film it over at Universal, and I'm going to do it myself. So there's almost nothing you can even say about it anymore.
Yeah.
Basically.
But he's still under contract.
He's still under contract.
So they could still say no.
Try to sue the cock.
Okay. Try to sue the cock.
Try
yeah.
to sue the cock.
Yeah, the cock will never stiff you.
No. He probably could have been sued, but... But
I guess at this point they're like, this is so low risk
point,
for
he
us.
Could be sued.
Yeah.
Not after this.
Yeah.
They're like, this
exactly.
is so low risk for us, and you won't shut the fuck up about it. So
exactly.
like, let's just let him do it.
That's basically what they said. And he even in lieu of his usual $250,000 director fee, $2.5 million through the old inflation calculator. That's what he made a film. He proposed instead of that, I will take nothing. But I will take 60% of each sale
ticket sales
of the negatives. The negatives. So not the
Which
tickets.
Those go to the exhibitor.
The theaters.
Yes.
Okay.
Like basically 60% of distribution.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And according to legend, he was in Barney Balaban's office, president of the company. And Barney said, where the hell are you going to find the money? And Hitchcock had his had Peggy come over with the fucking checkbook. And he said, who do I make the check out to? And it was $800,000 from his personal bank account, which is $8 million.
Yeah, it's 10 times.
It's 10 times,
for this year.
By the way. The combined offer accepted by Paramount and Universal, and old Al got to work with $800,000 of his own money, much to the chagrin of his wife, Alma, who they had to mortgage their house for this shit.
Wow, he really fucking
he
believed
really
in this movie.
Really believed in this movie.
Wow.
There was a famous quote by Alma, and she was like, so do we have to, like, mortgage the pool or the whole house for this fucking, like, slasher film that you're doing, you know?
Wow.
And again, I mean, this is Hitchcock, like, this is the legend. This
Before
is, like...
slasher
wild,
films exist.
Dude.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's like, babe... I really believe in Sharknado.
Exactly, man.
I mean,
exactly.
How dare you?
Like, Sharknado made a lot of money.
You, like, compared Psycho by Alfred Hitchcock to Sharknado.
That's what people thought it was going to be,
like,
though.
As far as the perception, though. Like,
yeah.
The perception is, like, it's just, like, a sloshy slasher movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's, like, the equivalent of pitching that.
It's yes.
like, no, but you don't understand. The sharks are in the tornado.
Right, right.
Like, I
like,
promise this is going to work.
Ow, I know. But, like, damn, man, are you sure?
It's
really like, $8 million?
Yeah.
Okay.
You believe in sharks and tornadoes or $8 million?
Yeah, man, like, no bueno. This would be like fucking, you know, Spielberg just all
yeah.
of a sudden being like, I think I want to make Sharknado.
I
know,
guess, you know, that's similar, I guess, like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
what, you sci-fi space
yeah.
opera movie?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yes.
Get
yeah.
out of here.
Yeah, I'm not talking about quality. I'm talking about like pure perception, like the pure.
What
like,
it could have been.
The white
and if it had, if it hadn't been him, it could have been a movie like that.
Yeah.
If it had not been Alfred Hitchcock, Psycho would have been... in some like collection of DVDs nowadays that
yeah.
you could get that were like you know lost movies
yeah,
basically.
Could have fumbled it, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's an easy fumble.
Easy fumble, but luckily it was this man. $8 million was basically the budget whenever you adjust for inflation. It was an $800,000 budget, which is dirt cheap. You know, that's how much it costs to make War Pigs, and that movie was a pile of shit. So.
$8 million is nothing nowadays.
No,
yeah, that's
no.
nothing nowadays. That's a lot of money for a self-financed film, but
yeah.
you know.
I can't. War Pigs was all right.
Wait till you hear how much it made.
So the offer was accepted by Paramount and Universal. Old Al got to work, $800,000 of his own money, mortgaged his own house, wife is very unhappy. And but this budget worked for him. According to Hitchcock, this is the thing. It's always sort of depends on who you ask. According to Hitchcock, he had just filmed North by Northwest, gigantic budget movie, and he wanted something that was a bit more indie. He wanted something that was not dealing with all the huge
less
bells and whistles.
Less stress, lower budget. He wants to shoot TikToks.
Yes.
I'm done producing music videos. I want to shoot TikToks.
Exactly, exactly. Right. And this was also the time the French New Wave was kicking up, and he thought this would be like a great American response to the whole French New Wave, Art Nouveau, you know, artsy-fartsy indie films.
Like, they're doing black and white, I'm going to do black and white.
Yeah, we'll do black and white too. Plus, black and white, like I said before, this would become kind of like cheap, you know. Black and white was seen as like a cheap, schlocky way to release a movie now. So he wanted to do a black and white that was really good, really well done. And to top it all off, black and white, we can show more blood. We can get away with more blood because it's not red, and the censors really don't like red blood in their movies. So we can get away.
It sounds like it was like a lot of things kind of just came together. He was like, I would love to do a cheaper film. I also can't do a more expensive film if I'm funding it myself, and I can get away with more shit. It just kind of sounds like it just works.
Yeah. He also lit black and white in different ways that had not been done really before.
It was incredible.
Which was kind of what I think a lot of the critical draw to it was like, look, he took this art form, which everything started in black and white. It was in black and white. So it was almost like, oh, we thought that was like run through.
Yeah,
and then he took it and did like this really different, unique thing with it, and yeah, that's a cool thing, and I think that's why I got it.
But hey, it's in black and white; you can't see the blood. You know, it's not red; it's black. Maybe it's cum. You know, who knows? But so old Hitch, he goes to his own writer first, his TV writer that was a writer on Alfred Hitchcock Presents, James P. Cavanaugh, to do the first draft of the script. He roughs out the bones of this thing, kind of like how Ed Gein would rough out bones to craft his gorgeous new face chair, you know. And this guy sort of gets like...
You don't want rough edges. You want smooth edges on
you
furniture.
Smooth, he was an artist.
You like hurt yourself if you like got a pointy edge.
Yeah, you don't want to sit down on a pointy edge couch, you know. Those bones got to be smooth, rounded, nice, perfect.
Wouldn't want anyone to get hurt.
Man, if Ed Gein, like Louis Vuitton could do an Ed Gein line right now...
Derelict.
Oh my god.
Instead of humans in motion, it's like humans not in motion. Dude, you know.
I mean, I don't know, Dahmer's most popular show ever, so.
Exactly, you know. Man.
That is the Zoolander sketch that we all need right now. Is Ben and will you please go back on Funny or Die? Just do like a short, like a 10-minute.
Yeah.
Or like even like a 5-minute where Derek Zoolander modeling Ed Gein's clothes in French.
Yeah, he made some good boots too. He made mostly women's clothing with dead bodies.
We love a feminist icon.
Yeah, man. He was a gay icon.
The times are changing, Derek.
Derek.
So, of course, his TV writer, he thought this thing read very television. The script read very TV. It was kind of long, drawn out for TV. But he actually... He kept this script in case this became just another episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. He was like, this thing might just be my fucking big episode of the season. You know, I don't know yet. I don't know what I'm doing with this thing yet. You know, which Paramount was super happy with. They're like, great. We love that. You know, we love that you don't even know if this is going to be a part of your contract or not at this point. But just in case it is going to be a film, he brings in Joseph Stefano. This guy's a rising star writer in the film industry, and he writes the film adaptation of Psycho. He writes the feature-length actual what this thing was going to become. Yeah, he writes the screenplay for it.
That's what that's called.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, you know, I'm getting around to it, all right? Give me a fucking second here.
He's adding color to a black and white.
Exactly. but an interesting thing that happened here is one of the... few places where they did stray away from the book. In the book, Norman Bates, he was like this older, overweight alcoholic. You really didn't like this guy. He was a dick, you know. But Hitch, old the cock, and Stefano, they sort of Stanley Kowalski'd this thing. They wanted just like
Streetcar Named Desire.
Streetcar Named Desire. Remember how that whole thing happened where they were like, we want Stanley to be hot. We want him to be likable. So it's not so black and white whether or not he was good or bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because if they're hot, it's ambiguous.
If they're hot, it's ambiguous.
You can't not like a hot guy.
Exactly. They were playing around with the hot people can do evil things too, which was this new concept. You
it's
know?
Black and white, but it's not black and white.
That's right.
We make these crimes ambiguous, but yes. if they're committed by a hot person.
Maybe you're rooting for the guy.
Maybe you want to fuck him.
Maybe
you want to
fuck
think of that?
Guy. Yeah. Yeah. What? You ever think of that? Maybe you want to fuck this guy, huh? You ever think of that?
I mean, I'm not sure. I haven't done any research on this, but I'd be willing to throw my bet on Alfred Hitchcock did a large dose of acid.
Oh,
and then
yeah,
got inspired to do. He was probably like reading this book on acid.
Maybe.
And was like, yo, this is going to be the perfect fucking scenario. You know how I'm going to do it? I'm going to do it all in black and white because that's all I see right now.
That's right, man. He was a nerdy little guy. He was definitely a nerdy little dude.
Wasn't he fat?
Yeah. He, was
he
like
probably did
fat,
not do
guy.
Acid. But still.
But still. I mean, his brain was acid enough. And in the book, Norman was also like obsessed with the occult. He was a big fan of pornography. He had like porn laying around and shit. And they took all that out too. They're like, we don't want some porn obsessed.
We don't
occult.
Want demonized porn.
Yeah,
porn,
exactly.
In the '60s, the occult was having like a comeback. Like,
yeah.
This is the beginning of Timothy Leary and the whole acid movement. It's like late '50s, early '60s, all that shit from like the Victorian era
right.
and like early 1900s was like re-emerging in pop culture and in music and shit.
Yeah.
Starting to.
Yeah, for sure.
So it makes sense. If he had like his finger on the pulse of what's going down, because he's like this Hollywood director is well known and successful already, then he's probably like, yo, I'm going to lose you. This is going to be the next kind of big thing for the next 5 years or
right.
something. Let me put this in there.
Yeah. Well, but he wanted it taken out, or Stefano did for sure. Stefano, the writer, he said, quote, he wanted to give the audience indications that something was quite wrong, but it could not be spelled out or overdone. He wanted you to like,
cool,
like
something's
don't
off.
Don't write
something's
helter off. Skelter and blood on the wall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Something's not right about this guy. On paper, he's just like a cute dude who's like nice, but I don't trust this guy.
Yeah, I want to fuck him.
I want to fuck him,
but I don't know why I'm not
fucking
him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says, "What's your height? You know, 5'10". And what's it? He's like occupation, cute dude. That's
cute dude.
Awesome or whatever
yeah.
he said.
It's like I want to fuck him, but I feel like he'll just fuck my corpse.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
yeah.
It's like I want to fuck him, but someone stopped me. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, what is it? What is it? What's stopping me from fucking this dude? That's what Stefano was. That was the quote. I want people to say, what's stopping me from fucking this dude?
Chef
just a very shiny knife. Stefano was actually the one. He brought up Anthony Perkins, the actor, handsome younger guy. He was killing it at the box office. A bi icon, by the way. Anthony Perkins in 1960
you
was very
said
much like
Anthony
yeah.
Hopkins.
I know.
Like, let's get someone everyone wants
yeah.
to fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anthony Perkins, even in 1960, he was very open. He was like, I like to fuck everybody.
Yeah,
I don't care what you
what
think
need.
About me. Yeah,
we need someone that everyone can see themselves in bed with. Yeah.
And he was this guy who was like I said, he had a big box office draw, but he wasn't very expensive. He was still kind of like working his way up, you know. And the heroine of this tale, Marion herself, Hitchcock's very first choice was Janet Leigh, who had one more film that she owed Paramount on her contract that she had signed back in 1953. She was on this like long-running contract to Paramount. She owed one more fucking thing to these guys, and she was done. And this could be it, since it was Paramount who was distributing this thing, you know.
This is like, cool.
Yeah.
Low budget thing. I don't have to try too hard. I kind of want to fuck this guy, but I don't know what that's about.
I don't know what it's about. I don't know what's stopping me from fucking this guy, but there's something. That's basically it. They sent Perkins and Janet Leigh the book, and both of them read the book, signed on without even, they didn't even talk about how much you're going to pay me, salaries, any of that shit.
Wow.
Yeah. And so Alfred got Perkins for $40,000 and Janet Leigh for $25,000.
Pay gap is real.
Pay gap is real, man. Which, you know, 40 grand was 400 grand, 25, $250,000 today. Mm-hmm. It was a steal.
For an indie movie, not that bad.
Not that bad. Yeah. Not that bad. It's interesting because 40 grand, if you remember, that's exactly the amount of money that she was stealing in the movie. That's how much you paid Anthony Perkins. I don't know why I don't want to fuck this guy, but I don't.
Something's stopping me.
So they had the script. They had the Alfred Hitchcock Presents crew ready to go. They had their stars. They had $800,000 of Alfred Hitchcock's fucking mortgage money. And they headed to Phoenix, Arizona to begin filming this thing.
Oh, they shot on location.
They shot a lot on location.
I thought Universal said they could use their lot.
They did. They used the Universal lot whenever they were done in Arizona. But they did shoot a lot of it in Arizona. Big establishing shots. Stuff like that, you know, very Phoenix-specific stuff. But then basically the rest of the movie, they came back to the Universal lot, and they shot it at Review Studios, which was basically like Universal Television. That's what it would become. You know, it was sort of their TV studio. And they shot it back there. When cast and crew began work on the first day, they had to raise their right hands and promise not to divulge one word of the story to the public. And Sir Alfred Hitchcock also withheld the real ending part of the script from them until it was time to shoot.
Whoa.
He didn't even tell them until it was time. Yeah.
Sick. He was really about these spoilers.
Really about these spoilers. He was not fucking around. Filming started in the morning, and they would finish at 6 p.m. or earlier on Thursdays because Hitchcock and his wife Alma would dine at Chasen's over on Beverly Boulevard every Thursday. So he's like... I gotta go. I gotta be out of here. Sorry.
He flew out from Arizona to get back to Beverly Boulevard. Yeah.
I gotta go to Beverly Boulevard.
She's really pissed about this whole mortgaging the house thing.
Yeah.
I really gotta put a band-aid on that situation.
Which is funny. She still wants to go to Chasen's every Thursday, even though we're mortgaged up to our fucking eyeballs now.
That's,
you know.
Funny.
But yeah, he had to go have dinner with his wife every Thursday. So 6 p.m. on Thursdays. That was it. And Janet Leigh, she only had 3 weeks to work on this movie. 3 weeks for $25,000. Not bad. She had 3 weeks to work on it and spent one whole entire week in the shower filming that fucking shower sequence, by the way. They had her in the shower for a week straight. They got like 75 different takes of this thing. It was this fucking, you know,
nuts. That was the most expensive part.
That was the most expensive part. I have a theory.
Did she have to be naked for the whole thing?
She was naked in that shower. Alfred Hitchcock was very...
run it again.
Yeah, run it. Yeah, that's my theory. Alfred Hitchcock was notoriously pretty perverted and creepy. Mm-hmm. He'd get very obsessed with women. He liked to torture his actors. He was very like Kubrick-esque
about
he wanted his actors to be very tortured.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what was really going on here.
Interesting.
I think
run it again, and this time, scream more.
Yeah. And he would sometimes do the stabbing himself. A lot of that was his hand with the knife. So he's basically just pretending to stab naked Janet Leigh.
This time, scream Alfred. Real slow.
It's like, you're going to want to fuck me, but not. You know. Real scream Alfred in the movie. She's like, ah, Alfred. It makes it in the cut.
Yeah. That's creepy as fuck. That's fucked up.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
So they filmed this whole thing. There's not a lot of stories from the set. There is one, but I can't even hardly tell it because it's a spoiler. But apparently he was kind of disappointed initially with the movie. They filmed this thing. He even he disliked the shower scene. He disliked everything. He kind of was leaning towards this is just going to go on Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Let's just fucking scrap this thing. Let's just make it an episode of this TV show. This thing didn't go well. But that is when Bernard Herrmann stepped in, the guy who scored the film, and he put the mix, you know, with the movie, and he told Alfred, sit back down, watch this fucker with the score, I'm telling you, you're gonna love it. And that was when Alfred Hitchcock was like, this is a fucking movie. So much to the point where he upped Herrmann's salary to $32,000 at the time, because he said like 33% of this movie is this score, basically. Like, and it is. It's one of the most iconic scores in film history ever.
Yeah.
You know, this was like,
and it shows just how important sound and sound design is in when you take color out. Like, it's like your senses compensate for the lack of input, so you're like audio, you're paying attention more to music and audio things because, you know, there's less shit to look at,
there's like cues and
that's kind of a cool thing with the craft of it all, of the, you know, I think there was a lot of elements that like kind of leaned him towards doing it in black and white, but almost like an unintended outcome and byproduct of that is this like analogy between right. like black and white on screen and this very vibrant, like dynamic soundtrack and yeah, like all these sure. kind of like, you know, comparisons and like meta kind of things that yeah. are plaguing, like the characters being very much like, you know, dynamic and you don't know whether they're good or they're bad. And like, I'm sure this is the movie that like you watch it with a different audio soundtrack and it makes the movie totally different.
Yeah, it's a different movie.
It's one of those. Like, for there's sure. some movies you can do that too, and not really. It's always going to be, it's the Avengers is always going to be fucking Avengers, you know, shit like that. But this, you can probably, I'm sure you put on like musical happy music from the 1950s, it's gonna make it a very different movie.
That's interesting because he did that with the trailer. Oh, yeah. The trailer of this movie was him taking you on a tour of the Bates Motel and the house, and he's talking about it like it's like a crime scene. It was a 6.5 minute trailer that he made for this thing, and he plays like very like happy-go-lucky music over it for a while, and then it like switches, you know. And it was. He was playing around with it. He was going to do the shower scene silent, like no score. It was just her screaming. But then that fucking Herman, he made that like, that was almost, that was just like a second, you know, like thought, basically. He was like, just try it out. Like, try yeah. this thing out over it. And Hitchcock loved it so much, he put it in there. But that's like, I mean, that started that whole thing, wow, the horror sting.
And know? Like, yet again, like, what a prime example of how collaborative the medium is.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
He would have been fucked if it wasn't for this, you know, composer coming in and, like, really making the movie what it is.
Dude.
So sometimes, like, you know, we give a lot of credit to directors, but, like, in really, the director is... It's just the one pulling the orchestra together. Yeah. You get like
his job is to get the best out of everybody else.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that score right. is so much, man. A score yeah. can really make or break a film. A bad score will ruin any movie.
You know, what's dope is the guy who did the score for Drive also did our buddy's
yeah.
movie.
Nice.
Go
oh, really?
Keith Sutliff.
Oh, what? Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Hell
That's
yeah.
why it sounds very similar. It's like do 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 like yeah. the 80s synth kind of stuff.
Nice, dude.
But it makes a movie. Like, you get these like nice dynamic shots, these unique shots of LA that are like really cool. And with that soundtrack, it kind of like imagine that with like, you know, 80s rock or
yeah.
like something else in there, like glam metal
totally
or something.
Different.
It's very different.
Yeah. When you rescore something, it becomes a whole different ball game. Just some other like really kind of just fun facts about this. All the blood was chocolate syrup.
That's the best blood. So if you ever work with fake blood, it's usually chocolate syrup with red food coloring.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And maybe like a little, some kind of either water or maybe some sugar else to thicken it, depending on how liquidy or how thick you want it.
Yeah.
I did hundreds of gallons worth of work with fake blood in a show.
Shit.
Did I tell you about the show called Splatter Theater?
Yeah, man. We talked about it. Or I don't know if it made it into an actual cut or not, but yeah. Yeah.
Well, whatever. Then, yeah. yeah.
No, go ahead, though. Yeah.
It's not in the compilation.
Yeah. In the
well, there you go.
Yeah.
It's in the comp. But yeah. No. Chocolate syrup is the shit. Because you're sitting there and it gets in your mouth, gets in your face, you just eat it.
Just eat
like,
it, yeah.
Just yeah.
It up, just
yeah.
It, just
well, and especially
down.
In black and white, you know. Yeah. It's like, yeah. It
you
looks
don't
like
even
blood.
Need to put
yeah.
the red dye.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's chocolate.
It's chocolate.
Hashtag syrup.
Josh
down.
Probably looked really sexual. So he was probably like, don't put the red in.
Yeah.
Just chocolate, my darling. I don't know why I gave him like an accent. It's pretty weird.
Yeah, I can't wait to do his episode, man. The whole Alfred Hitchcock episode is going to be very interesting. This was also the very first film ever in America to show a flushing toilet.
Hilarious. Yeah. I remember that was a big deal.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
What?
I thought it was crude and like, you know, shameful to be like, you don't show that.
Yeah, yeah. Stefano, when he was writing the script, because the book, there's a very particular part. She's flushing evidence in a toilet, and it's in the book, and it's very, you know, it's all out there. And Stefano was like, I have to put this part in the movie. I have
to
put the...
It's very important.
It's extremely important. And Hitchcock was like, okay, well, fucking just put it in there then, you know? And he's like, well, it's a flushing toilet. We're not really supposed to show that. And Hitchcock is probably...
It's black
not,
and white.
It's black and white. It's not like there's shit in the toilet, you know? It's fucking, like, evidence. just show it. But yeah, before this in America, they had never shown a flushing toilet. That was against the code.
It's like taboo, you know? Yeah.
It was taboo type of shit, especially a woman flushing a toilet. That was fucking unheard of, you know?
No. I'm so perplexed.
Until 1960, until this movie, yes. Women couldn't flush the
toilet. Women could not flush the toilet. That's because women don't poop.
They were incapable.
Women
didn't
know
how.
Women did not poop until 1960.
The weirdest rule I've ever heard of. I'm so perplexed. Someone sat in a room and was like, we got to draw a line somewhere.
We got to draw a line somewhere. Women did not start pooping until 1960. That's what we're saying here on Film
It
History.
Was a form of empowerment. It was like they were given cigarettes to smoke while walking in a parade and encouraged to poop.
That's right. That's right. This is the women's movement, that's, you know, happening
the
right
women's
here.
Bowel movement.
Right here. The women's bowel. Right here on Hitchcock's set, the most progressive with women ever.
Hashtag support women. Also, stay in the shower naked for a week. Yeah.
Also, I'm going to pretend to stab you for like
you
a week straight.
You can do too is you can poop if you want on camera. Like if you happen to
just so happen to, look, toilet's right there.
Look, it's
next
it's
to
all
the shower.
Black and white. They're just going to think it's blood anyways. Yeah. We'll just roll with it.
She's like, Alfred, there are no cameras in here. It's just me and you.
If
he's
you
like,
wanna
it's
just,
part of the movie.
If some of it happens to get on my chest, it's not a big deal.
Like, just don't flush it afterwards. Let's just keep it, you know.
Step on me. This isn't a script, Alf.
Yeah, this is. We've strayed away from the movie at this point. So this toilet flush of a movie. It's time for it to come out, baby. This is about the release of Psycho. They're going heavy, man. And this man has made the movie with all the money that he mortgaged his house for. Janet Leigh shot her part in 3 weeks. Anthony Perkins shot the rest of it. You know, they shot for like 2 months. It was like, I think it was from like November to February or something like that. But it was a very short time. He kept up the budget, you know. I mean, when you watch it, you can see it wasn't like fucking the Avengers or anything. So he started running that trailer that I was talking about, the 6-minute and 30-second long trailer. He's chewing you around the set. For a man who does not like spoilers for his movie, his trailer was kind of spoiler in my opinion. He's like bringing you through the motel and the house like it was a crime scene, like it was a thing that had actually happened, which, hype, I get it. That's cool, you know. But he's also like, he's
Christmas music playing in the background.
Yeah. Just beginning to look a lot like Christmas. But he's
a new family movie from Alfred Hitchcock.
He's doing the thing where he's trying to like give you blue balls. He's like, and this is the room where, oh, never mind. You just have to watch the movie. You know, like that's kind of what he's trying to do. But I don't know, man. Watch the trailer after the movie. I'll tell you like that. Don't watch the trailer until you watch the movie, because afterwards, you're going to watch that shit and say, that was spoilers. That was a spoiler right there. That was a spoiler right there. I called it. The film was released on June 16th, 1960 at the DeMille Theater and the Baronet Theater in New York City, just two theaters at the time. It was the first film sold in the U.S. on the basis that no one would be admitted to the theater after the film had started. So he had a no late admission policy for the film. Yeah. If someone comes up and buys a ticket for this thing and it's already running, don't let them in.
That is so funny. He's like, how are you going to wield your distributor leveraging power?
Yes.
You paying for this? You fucking put up the money. You're taking 60% of the distro. What are you? Okay, big producer. Nobody fucking enters after it starts.
That's like, right.
The most childish thing to levy. That's like saying, like, nobody can eat fucking
popcorn
in my movie. Yeah. Like,
what? I mean, actually, that's like, that's also kind of good marketing, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, that's
like,
why? Spread word of mouth. Like, why can't you get late?
You
why
can't even go in there late. Yeah, they won't even let you in. That makes you want to go.
Yeah,
you got to go.
This movie? I kind of want to fuck it, but I don't know why.
Not only that,
first influencer house.
Not only that, but every theater that showed this movie had a cardboard cutout in the lobby of Sir Alfred Hitchcock. He's pointing to his watch with a note saying, "The manager of this theater has been instructed at the risk of his life not to admit to the theater any persons after the picture starts. Any spurious attempts to enter by side doors, fire escapes, or ventilating shafts will be met by force. The entire objective of this extraordinary policy, of course, is to help you enjoy Psycho more. Alfred Hitchcock.
That is so long.
Yeah.
That's so much to read.
Oh, they were all long-winded back then. That's how the attention spans were actually long. People read things and like read books and shit.
Yeah.
If you got a blurb over three words, I'm moving on.
But it's like you were saying, this is all hype train. Mm-hmm. This is like, you're not allowed in. The theater managers are going to be murdered if they let you in here late, you know.
Character count. Is that 140 characters?
Is that even a tweet? Is that over a tweet? Longer than a tweet?
I can't count. I went to Mississippi Public School.
Hilarious.
Hitchcock believed people who entered the theater late and thus never saw the appearance of star actress Janet Leigh would feel cheated. And yeah, I mean, it was two different movies. You can't come into this thing late. You can't watch Psycho halfway through. Yeah.
Can you come back in if you have to piss?
No way, man. You got to piss in your chair.
Yeah, piss in his mouth.
That's right. You got to piss in Alfred Hitchcock's mouth. Yeah, the cardboard cutout was also in the front of the theater, and you'd go pee on it. And he was behind the cutout. You didn't see him. But he was back there.
Step on me.
Yes. Make me into an artist.
Piss me, beat me.
So at first, of course, theater owners, they did not love this. They were like, we don't like this. We would really just like to let people buy tickets whenever the fuck they want, please. But he insisted. They thought they would lose business because of this. But however, after the first day, the owners enjoyed long lines of people waiting to see the film, and they would wait until the next people came out to go in.
Wow.
Yeah.
It worked, man.
Hitchcock did most of the promotion himself. He forbid Lee and Perkins to make the usual television, radio, and print interviews for fear that they would spoil this shit.
Also, I mean, I imagine it's like if he wants them to be afraid of this person, it's like I don't want it to make you feel like a real person.
Yeah, cart him out in front of the world. Yeah. Which is great for Janet Leigh and Anthony Perkins. They're like, oh no, I don't get to go on the fucking press tour.
I don't have to do a press tour. Yeah. Oh, I can stay in my house and enjoy my money.
Especially because Janet Leigh had just finished her contract with Paramount at this point. Yeah. Like, that was it, you know? Yeah. So she's like, I don't even have to.
Oh, God, I have to go on vacation.
Yeah, oh no. Yeah, please. But so even the critics were not given private screenings. There were no focus groups that were brought in for early screenings of this thing. The critics had to see the film with the general public. And he was keeping a tight fucking lid on this thing. He did not.
That's one I really like, and it's very interesting. I feel like, why don't more people demand that? Then your attendance isn't affected one way or another for at least your opening weekend by critics.
Yeah.
Because critics are usually see it like three days, 5 days before. Write an article and do a spread and write a review. But like, fuck that, man. Let the people decide. Let the actual box office decide. And then the critics can be the ones to see if they're in alignment with like what everybody thinks, or maybe
for sure.
It's interesting that he did that because he was concerned about spoilers. Because like, there's no fucking Twitter back then. You know what I mean? It's like, how are these journalists going to spoil shit? There's no like easy means of widespread news distribution. You know what I mean? But like, they're not. These are professional journalists. They're not going to write an article in a paper spoiling your movie.
They will. If they don't like you, like some of these, I mean, dude, you have a hit piece on you from like the Post
or
the Times.
Contracts that they like can't like non-disclosure agreements and stuff.
I don't know.
Nah, it's a review because look, the timing of them is supposed to be for opening weekend. So they see it before, so it releases out. So it's supposed to be like as a promotion for the release of the movie.
Right.
But you can't control what they write because they're a critic.
You can't, like, if you're a professional reviewer, you can't put spoilers in your review. Like, there's contracts about that.
Nowadays,
these are
newspaper journalists, and this was the only pipeline for that news. There's not even TMZ, there's not even magazines that are doing this shit. You know what I mean?
For sure.
So if anybody's listening to anything, that's why, like, movie critics back then, and even through, like, the, I don't know, 70s or 80s at least, maybe your 90s, but we're well-renowned and respected, and they could determine the success or failure of a movie depending on say, you know, who said what and how to what degree.
And I also like the idea of them sitting amongst a crowd of people watching it, because like they're seeing
you
their
get
reactions.
The crowd reactions. Yeah.
It's going to sway them
versus
a little bit.
Versus them in a room all on their own.
Right. Or, yeah. They're seeing the people in the front row fucking screaming and like, you know, like that's definitely going to be like, damn, okay, this is something, you know, like rather than a bunch of assholes sitting next to each other, just out critiquing each other.
I'm gonna do
that
with Madness.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I think that'd be a great idea. Yeah, man. Fuck it. The critics have to see it with the general public. That's all there is to it.
You gotta pee in my mouth.
That's right. You gotta piss on the cardboard cutout. And I'm gonna be behind it, but you don't know that. You wanna fuck me, but you won't for some reason. But it was a slow hit. It didn't quite hit its numbers like opening weekend.
Well, 'cause it has to spread by word of mouth.
Exactly. This was a big word of mouth thing. But it went gangbusters afterwards. If you remember, the budget for this thing was $800,000. And in its opening week, Psycho grossed about $46,500 at the DeMille. And a record $19,500 at the Baronet over there. That's $66,000 total. But this got the people talking. This was like churning up a lot of, it became a sensation, you know. And then they expanded to five more theater chains, grossed $143,000 more that week. And then it opened worldwide. And I don't have the numbers exactly. I could not find what this thing made on its worldwide release. But, you know, it went to Tokyo, it went to France, it went all over the world. And you remember how Hitchcock had signed his 60% for the negatives. Motherfucker made a fortune. He made upwards of $15 million personally for this film.
Bro, didn't the box office, I think total gross was like 50 overall.
And today it's up to $50 million. And now that was 60% of the negatives, so I don't know how that changed. Like, in 1966, it got...
I think it was still a waterfall. So, like, you still do 50% to the exhibitor, and then of the next cut, he got 60%.
Right. Wow. Yeah. So, that's $15 million off of, you know, at the end of, like, its run, basically, in theaters, which is $150 million today. And of course, the critics are mixed. You know, for the most part, everybody thought
so
it was
$800,000 to $150 million.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
See why? Like after this, every studio is. What do you want to do? Here's a bag of money. Like,
yeah.
You know,
wow. Yeah.
Like
yeah,
nobody
yeah.
really questioned.
I sort of compare it to George Lucas's merch deal that he made.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, fine, like don't pay me a lot for the movie, but I'm going to take all the merch sales, you know, and then fucking made billions, you know.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's always like this, like finding a way to fuck over the studio, you know, like, but it's by their own petard, you know, it was like, fine. Like if you don't want it, then I'm going to do it, but I'm going to take 60%. They're like, ha, yeah. Good luck with your 60% of this, like, you know, chocolate syrup slasher movie, you know, your fucking Janet Leigh thing, whatever.
I'm going to pee in your mouth.
I'm going to piss in your face, you know.
He's like, good. I love it.
Yeah. He pissed in the face of the studios.
Oh man, that's wild.
And the critics are mixed. For the most part, everybody thought it was great. Perkins and Lee killed it. But people were pretty disturbed by this movie and blame it for creating the genre of splatter films. You're talking about like splatter theater. That was sort of all these movies started coming out now of women just being fucking splattered all over the wall, you know? And they're like, this is
his
fault.
They said we couldn't hit them anymore. So we just decided to start murdering them all over on screen. They're like, you gotta take the violence on women out of screen. This isn't what we meant, guys.
Yeah,
you just pivoted to something far more extreme.
They're like, well, at least we're not slapping them.
Yeah.
At least they die afterwards, you know?
There's no real violence, only simulated violence.
That's right.
But
that's
way more grotesque.
Look, nobody would ever do this. It's over the top.
It's
people
so over
know.
The top. No man would ever kill a woman with a knife in a shower. Come on. But, so these are just gore fests started coming out. Spatter films. Walt Disney, later on in the 60s, Alfred Hitchcock wanted to film at Disneyland for a movie he was doing. And Walt Disney was like, abso-fucking-lutely not, bro. Like, I saw Psycho. That movie's disgusting.
That's
You're not coming in here. Walt Disney, by the way, who killed a man on a polo field. Like, for real. You know, like, it's like, this man doesn't want you in his park filming, okay?
It's like, hey, family values over here.
Yeah, yeah. I draw the line
Take
somewhere.
Take it to the polo field, sir. Have some decency.
He told him no on the polo field over that man's dead body, you know?
We kill people in private like gentlemen.
That's right.
Have some class,
yeah.
Sir.
Howard Hughes is present when I kill someone, okay?
As he just mallets the man's head. Just... Have some goddamn dignity.
We don't use knives, and they're not women.
My instruments for killing are live animals and gold cutlery.
And also, there better not be a goddamn Jew on my set, okay?
Play the new Kanye.
Janet Leigh, she received threatening letters after this movie's release detailing that they would like to do what they would like to do to Marion Crane. One was so grotesque, she passed it on to the fucking FBI. And the FBI went and found the dude who wrote it and basically said, like, yeah, hey, if that dude ever writes you a letter again, please let us know. Because he's definitely out to kill you. So. He's not happy about the movie.
Wow, holy yeah. shit.
The Bates House, we're sort of winding the episode down here now. I wrote less than I thought, but fuck it. I got a lot to riff on. So.
We've been talking for a while.
Okay,
I
good.
I have a massive headache.
Oh, gotcha,
due to lack of sleep, too much caffeine, and no food. So yeah. This has nothing to do with this podcast.
And it's midnight, yeah. So. The Bates House, though moved from its original location, still resides on Universal's lot. You know, if you've ever taken the studio tour through Universal, they pass you by the Bates House. And cool. It is the actual house in the movie. The motel is recreated.
Sweet.
The house is real.
Cool.
I think you can go in there at some point. There's like, there you can go in the interior during like Halloween or some
Whoa.
Shit.
I want to buy it.
Yeah.
I just want to live in it.
Yeah. Buy that bitch and live in it. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Go on the studio tour if you go. And then, so they had sequels to this thing. There's Psycho 2, there's Psycho 3.
Really?
Anthony Perkins returns for one of them, I think.
Hitchcock have anything to do with those?
Yeah, yeah. He had something to do with those.
Did he direct them?
I don't know.
He was around?
I think he was just around for it. I don't think he directed those.
Okay.
I think it was like Alfred Hitchcock presents the rest of the psychos. But
were they sequels or they were just like same vibes or like how did they sequelize that?
Shit, man. I didn't do a lot of research on the sequels, man.
Next episode, the surprise. We can't give away the spoilers. Gotta have a twist.
It's like, like this time, I want to fuck my dead dad.
Yeah. Gus Van Sant of Good Will Hunting fame remade this movie in 1998, like almost shot for shot. He changed some things around, but it's like, and it was fucking Vince Vaughn as Norman Bates.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It was a hell of a cast, man. It was Anne Heche, Julianne Moore.
I don't mind it. It's
really
different.
I've never seen it. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's.
It's totally different. Because isn't it in color?
Yeah, it's in color.
Yeah. It just gives it a different vibe. It's like a modern play. It's like when somebody takes a Shakespeare play and does like a modern rendition of it or something.
Right.
It's like you know that there's source material, but it's different enough, but still the same enough to kind of, I don't know, it's cool.
Yeah, it's just
different. It's not, is it anywhere close or better than the first? No, not, absolutely not. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, it was a cast too, man. Anne Heche, Julianne Moore, Viggo Mortensen, William H. Macy, Rita Wilson, all of them motherfuckers.
Stacked. They were all like really, really big.
Yeah. How about them apples? You know, because that was Good Will Hunting. That was a quote from that movie.
Wait, really?
Another one that Gus Van Sant did.
Oh, I never saw it.
It was a really whiny
You've
movie.
Never seen Good Will Hunting?
No.
Good Will Hunting is basically
what
would
like
happen.
How do you like them apples?
What would happen?
That's from? I thought that was saying was from like the 1600s.
Well, no, man. That was Good Will Hunting.
What?
Good Will Hunting is like, what if your therapist needed therapy?
What did Will do to be hunted?
Oh, man.
Why are they hunting Will?
He was Norman Bates. But that's it, man. That's Psycho. I think that's enough information.
I love it. It's midnight. I'm
go watch it. It is for rent on Amazon. Absolutely go watch this motherfucker. It is absolutely amazing. If you have seen it, watch it again. If you haven't seen it, absolutely go watch it. Hopefully,
I gotta see it again. It's been a minute.
Yeah, man.
I love it. It's great. I remember liking it, but you know.
The very tail end, you will know exactly what I'm talking about when you watch it. The tail end of this movie, Hitchcock did not want it to stay in the cut. I don't know how it still survives today. It is the shittiest part of the whole movie. Should have been cut out, and it should have just fucking rolled credits way before it happened.
She shits on his chest.
Whoa. They don't flush the toilet.
Wait, but didn't he have final? Why didn't he have final cut over this?
I don't. He had final cut, but I was so confused by that. He was like, he hated the ending, but for some reason it was still in there, and it sucks. He was right. Like, it's a terrible ending.
I don't have any more money to shoot anything else.
We'll cut this. How's it end?
It ends with a psychotherapist. He goes and talks to Norman Bates in jail, and he comes out. And he, for one, breaks the news that this guy's girlfriend and this lady's sister is dead. And they have very little reaction to that. But then he goes on to explain, like, the entire movie. he explains what you just saw. Like, he explains Norman Bates. And he just, it is absolutely
guys, in case you missed it late and you came into the theater late.
There's
a recap for you.
You weren't even allowed in late, so you definitely watched the entire thing. But just in case, I'm going to like give it to you in a fucking Reader's Digest version. You know?
It sucks.
So just don't even watch the very end. As soon as you see that part, just turn it off. Cool. You've seen the movie.
For sure. But,
or skip to the credits. Cool. You know?
Well, if you want to see my movie, you can follow my journey at Instagram at Drake Cummings, on Twitter at Drake_Cummings, on TikTok at Hollywood Drake, at my merch store, RagingTwinsMerch.com, and if you're on an internet website somewhere, just tie my name in and let me know what happens.
Boom.
You can find me at Sailor_Dev on Insta and AbracadabraDev on Twitter.
Hell yeah. You can find me at James Wyatt Scott, Jimmy Deloy. Just Google me as well. You can find me, you know, in prison or whatever. You can also find me, you can find us at Film History, the History of Film, FHHF Podcast, also depending on where you're looking in. And you can also find me behind the cardboard cutout of myself in the front of the theater. And if you got to go pee-pee, just come down to the front and make a deposit, baby. This has been Film History,
the History of Film.
You know what I'm talking about!